pale horse. The man who sat on him was death.
And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello and welcome to Declarations of War. We are your hosts, Alexei of Card, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And Andy Astronaut.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going pretty good. Joining us in the new year, 2021, everybody. Been a little bit of a rough start already, but I think brighter things are ahead for all of us. So if you're in distress right now, just try to stay strong. I think we will get through it. Before we get into everything else, I do want to throw out a little recruitment plug. NAR is, of course, recruiting. We have restarted NAR Academy with a brand new structure, and we are looking for new recruits. So if you're either a newer player, or maybe you've done mostly NullSec fleet PvP and you know want to brush up on your small gang skills, maybe you're an industrialist or sort of a more casual Care Bear type player and you want to get into PvP, now is the time. tinyurl.com/NAR Academy. We had a poll. Should we allow filaments, which were technically introduced for the 2019 winter event, to be eligible for the 2020 Black Mark Awards? It was tight, but we did have record participation, and ultimately the audience decided that yes, we should have the filaments available, and they do in fact make their appearance in the award nominations, which I'll talk about shortly. But before we get into the Black Mark Awards, there are some pressing contract updates we have to share with you, including a pretty awesome fight, especially considering that it took place in HiSec. Artemis, take it away. NAR on contract.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a contract to destroy an Athanor. Let me pull up the battle report real quick here. And essentially what happened is, the first time around, we Rio the thing, come back for the armor timer, and hostiles, like, it's time for AUTZ. The hostiles are fighting Wolfpack Union Alliance. They are AUTZ, RUTZ, sort of that early European time zone group. And so we show up there using the standard Lashaks with some Nestors to the second timer, and it's like, I want to say 3 or 4 human beings in fleet, but of course we're all heavily multi-boxing, so we've got maybe 10 to 12 characters. And they show up, and they have... What do they bring for the first? Well, of course they have the Athanor, which is a very strong force multiplier with all of its newts, all of its damage, all of its fighters. Like, this thing can dish out a bunch of DPS, and more importantly, jams in the mids, which means you can shut down a significant portion of your logi, plus the newts, which can shut down even more. So we really, during the reinforcement attempts, were heavily relying on the extra remote rep from the Lashaks to keep us alive, because the Nestors were either perma-newted or perma-jammed. And so we come into this next fight, you know, we're pretty confident that we could handle the Athanor on its own. I've been saying Athanor this whole time. It was an Astra House.
Astra House, yeah. The Athanor we killed no problem. No resistance on that one.
Astra House is also significantly more scary if you've ever fought one. And it is the one with the fighters. So we're shooting at this Astra. We're pretty confident we can take it, as well as like maybe a handful of hostiles. But instead of a handful of hostiles, we get, I want to say it was 6 Balgorns and 6 to 8 Gnosi that show up. And seeing that, we're like, nope. So we chill on the Astra, Athanor, Astra. We chill on the Astra for a while, keep shooting it, just generally keeping ourselves aligned out as best we can. There are, of course, also bumping mechs, as any HiSec fight will have. And so our fleet is getting bumped along the way, and we're just seeing, okay, are they actually going to try and commit these ships to the fight, or are they just, like, here for show to try and scare us off? And they do actually warp them in, and when they do that, we take a warp out. It was a bit sketchy, just because of the bumping mechs that were in play, but we managed to get everyone off safely. We try and bait a fight out on a gate, because they do have us pretty significantly outnumbered with their fleet, but they don't take it. They're only going to fight on this Astra, and they're only going to fight on this Astra if we set up first and they can warp to us at zero. So, of course, we're not happy with that, with the current fleet comp, and we need to do some more intel gathering. So we let them have that timer.
The math was this. Like, if we were pretty confident if we could engage without the Astra House's newts on our nesters, we're pretty sure we could crack the Balgorns, because they didn't really have much logi or anything like that.
They had zero logi as far as we could tell.
Right. I mean, there was always a chance they could, like, RR the Gnosises or something, but it didn't seem like it. However, we were already having some troubles on the Astra grid with all the newt pressure it was throwing out at us. So that, plus six Balgorns on top, they had as many Balgorns as we had Lashaks. Like, it just wouldn't have worked out. But we're pretty sure if we could get them away from the Astra grid, that it would work out. So we did try, it just didn't work. Excuse me. It didn't work out. They must have run the same math and realized that if they went off the Astra grid, that we'd probably beat them. But, yep, you know, it's a defensive timer, so we have to be the ones that press the issue. And since we couldn't be on grid, you know, we had to kind of concede there.
So we come back a bit again, I want to say the very same night, just later on into USTZ, Rio the thing again, using the same standard Lashaks. And the whole time we're theory crafting, thinking about, okay, how could they be fit? And how could we counter it? And there's a way to go about this, which is you either look at the worst possible scenario and assume that your opponent is the best possible opponent they could be, or you look at what they've lost in the past. And if we look at what they lost in the past, their Gnosis fit is kind of jank. They had, like, dual tank Gnosi. It looked like just refit gate camping stuff. And so based off of that, we're like, okay, I mean, we can basically ignore the Gnosis. They're going to be paper thin, nuke through them, that's all the damage gone. The Balgorns were scariest if they're full nuke Balgorns, and then relying on the Gnosi for their damage, Gnosi plus the Astra House. And so really what we needed to focus on is how do we deal with these newts and still have our logistics in play? And the solution we came up with, I don't know if we should go into too much detail, but to suffice it to say, we tweaked our nester fit to be newt resistant almost entirely. And then we also changed our DPS lineup from Lashaks to Praxi. And there are a bunch of different reasons why the Praxis was the best option for that particular role. In particular, its guns could not be shut off by newts, which resolves the problem of putting one Balgorn on each nest, on each Lashak, and suddenly we literally have zero DPS. And they also have some other utility, or a significant amount of utility in the mids, while also you can have some good tank on them. Plus, there's also the surprise factor. Just like, we didn't know what their Gnosis would be fit like, they didn't know what our Praxis would be fit like. So that's what we rolled with. We come out for the armor timer. Again, time for that, prime time for their corp. Very much not prime time for our corp, but having seen what they brought last time, knowing they were itching for a fight, we got some better turnout on this timer in the middle of the night for most people. And so we came in, our fleet was four Nesters, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Praxis, and an Absolution for Lynx. Pretty solid fleet. They came in with the same standard, I want to say it was 6 Balgorns and 6 to 8 Gnosi. So we had more even numbers. They still outnumbered us, and they still had the Athnor, or the Astra House, on their side. We get through the timer, and I'm going to have to pull up the video footage to get the timings exactly right. But essentially what occurred is they show up again in local, and we figure out that they're warping in from a point in space, from a celestial, and make some movements around the Astra House grid to try and, like, mess with their ability to warp in at zero on us. And eventually they resort to using one of their bumping macs as just a straight warp in at zero, which is fine. That's what we wanted them to do anyway, based on the Praxis fit. So they warp in at zero, but they warp in staggered. I don't know if their Balgorns bumped off of a customs office, or if they expected us to run again, and so they wanted to warp in staggered to sort of bait out the fight, get it started, and then follow in with the Balgorns and truly shut us down and mop the floor. So they warp in the Gnosi first, and we just start shredding through Gnosi. We have no tackle in the fleet. That was not our intention. Our goal in this contract is to kill the Astra. If their fleet manages to warp away, that's okay. So we shred through a couple of Gnosi, and then they warp off and reposition, and we take the opportunity to warp off and reposition as well. timer has still got 15 or so minutes on it, we're fine with repositioning in order to get to a happier spot. So we do that, get our fleet back together, get regrouped, and they look like they're itching for round two. They group up the Nosai and the Balgorns again, and this time they come in pretty much all at once. The Balgorns come in first, though. At this point, we're fairly confident we know how these Nosai are fit, because we see their lost males. We're fairly confident we can handle their damage, and we just want the shinier kill males. So we go straight for the Balgorns. We have our guy, it was his first fleet in Nuar. And I forget his name, let me find him. I want to say it was Analog Exile, maybe? Yeah, Analog Exile comes in, and he'd agreed to be my DPS anchor and my target caller while I was quad boxing. So he is just calling out these things based on like distance to us and who we think is going to be a priority target. And we just start shredding through Balgorns to the extent that I delock the Aster House so that my low skill point alts have more target slots available to lock up more Balgorns. Of course, after they lose, I want to say they lost three. Let me pull up the Kimmel again. They lost two Balgorns, and then they warp off, and we just let them leave because we are here for the Asterheimer rather than for the fleet itself. So in the end, we killed 1.5 bill, lost nothing across both timers, and then that was the armor timer for the Astra. Come back for the hull timer. Our fleet is absolutely massive because it was a slightly better time zone for us, and everybody saw the fight we had on the armor timer. We're like, ooh, this looks fun. And we managed to kill it and complete the contract. So that was pretty fun. Our theory crafting dudes came up with actually just, I think, a new standard for our Nestor fit because we like it a lot better. We have a good flex option for what to do in high newt scenarios if the Lashaks aren't going to be the best bet. Also a good low skill point entry, because the Praxis requires literally no ship skills, just the weapons, and it's super flexible. And we got a good fight, too. So that was fun.
Super awesome. I wish I could have been at that Balgorn fight. It looked like so much fun.
Yeah, I woke up to all the kill mails and I was super excited about it, but like bummed I missed it, but it was fun to see.
It was super fun to fly in. Everybody was very professional. I posted the raw recording internally, because I was very proud of how our pilots handled it. Many of us were heavily multi-boxing. Some of us were in their first fleets with Nuar and still FCing like a champ. And so I think overall, like, if it didn't have OPSEC stuff in it, it'd be a great way to showcase what Nuar is capable of.
Well, now that the op is over, maybe we could release it someday. I'm sure there will come a time at which point the sec stuff isn't that relevant, I assume.
Yeah. Next decent balance patch.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of patches, we do have a best game update category. Black Mark Awards are back. The nominations period has closed, and we do have our nominations. If you are listening to this show, you will be able to vote on the Black Mark Awards. You'll find a link to the voting in the description of this episode. So you can find that either wherever you're getting your podcast. Should be in the description. If not, head to declarationsaboard.com, and you'll see it in the show notes here. We'll also put it out on social media and stuff. I'm going to try to get as many people voting as possible. But here are your nominees. First, for FC of the Year, DJ Aldard, The Last Spartan, Ron USMC, and Asher Elias. For Doctrine of the Year, Eagles, Moonins, Lashaks, and Lokis. Best game update. The overwhelming nominee was the ESS, but we also had some competitors in there. The Dynamic Bounty System. Some people did ESS and Dynamic Bounty System together, but I actually think it's worth splitting them out into two different things. Interdictor Rebalance, Filaments, which we alluded to in the start of the show, technically came out in 2019. We're going to give it a pass because it's been so cool. Dev of the Year, CCP's Goodfella, Rise, Ratati, and Dopamine. For the Community Hero, this is a new category for this year. Just with all the craziness that 2020 gave us, there are a lot of people in the EVE community that stepped up in one way or another, or, you know, we really want to take the time to honor. Nominee Matterall for really kicking content into high gear once the COVID lockdown happened. A lot of people are relying on him to, you know, make their lives a little bit better and provide a much needed distraction. Kellen Darklight, who donated over 1 million Plex for Good for the Australian wildfires by auctioning off a gold magnate, which is one of the rarest ships in the game. Chappie 78 Chapman, who you might know from Chappie's birthday bash. He was a terminally ill Eve player, and the community kind of rallied around him to give him potentially his last awesome birthday party. That was just a massive fight. Olsen and his World War Chappie. And finally, Pandora Singularity, who was the chief organizer of Eve North, which is a huge player community and meetup, obviously going through a lot of tough times this year with COVID. So those are your nominees for Community Hero. We also have some other more evergreen categories. Best CSM Representative, Brisk Rubal, Phantomite, Torvald Aruz, Mike Azariah, and Kenneth Feld. We have five options in that category this year. For Best Declarations of War Guest, Phantomite once again, Feral, Brisk Rubal once again, and the recently on the show Lloyd George, the artist that makes the watercolors on Reddit. For NOR MVP, Dalv Flitio, I'm not actually sure, Andy Astronaut, we just call him Dalv. We got Andy, we've got Robert Mason, Tommy McPhee, and Levitain have both been nominated. So a lot of competition from the EU side of things. Dal, Robert, Tommy, and Lave, all EU FCs. They all are like pretty recognizable figures in our European time zone. Andy, I don't disagree at all with your placement on that. I know we were talking about it before the show, Andy, but you really have done a lot this year, whether you'll admit to it or not.
So I am around. I'm on Discord a lot. I respond fast.
The number of standings things that I haven't had to deal with because you've taken care of it. You know, that's not nothing. And then we have Rookie of the Year, Dalv Flitio again, Fryon Ivo, Tommy McPhee again, and Ovix Tilarin.
I think Rookie of the Year is going to be really tough when you have half the competition also in the MVP of the year.
Yes, I think that's also telling of just how strong recruitment's been in 2020. If there was ever a bright spot, we've grown not just in number, but in quality as well. Super active, super high quality people. And I want to give an honorable mention to Viz for Rookie of the Year. Viz, like, just narrowly didn't make it. We talked about him on a previous show. I think I mentioned him anyway. Recently graduated. Talk about an NOR Academy success story. Viz Talvanen, great guy, good pilot, getting better every day, really stepping up in some interesting ways, which I won't discuss here for his OPSEC reasons, but he's doing some cool stuff. I think he's finding his niche and really coming into his own, so I want to give him a shout out there. Just narrowly missed this category. Now, I know that we don't want to tip the scales on any particular nominees here in these categories. But Artemis, Andy, is there any particular category that you're looking at as going to be particularly competitive this year?
We already mentioned that Rookie will be particularly competitive. I agree there. I think everyone there has done like pretty outstanding stuff that's all very different from each other. I don't think there's a lot of overlap in like what the people have been nominated for, but I think they've all been valuable in different ways. So that'll be kind of interesting to see.
I think Dev of the Year will be very interesting to see what happens. I think it may reflect it may reflect the best game update, or maybe be the counterpart to best game, or the counterpoint, pardon me, to best game update, as one dev or another has championed a particular game update, or at least has been a source of a lot of communication for it. We may see that they as a result get a boost, or perhaps a have a lackluster performance in Dev of the Year. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'd agree there. There's a lot of updates that have been pretty dividing as far as people. Some people really like them. Some people really hate them. I don't know if there's a lot of updates this year that have been universally well received just because of the way most of them are aimed at kind of rebalancing certain aspects, which by nature kind of hurts one group and helps another group. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I think I agree with Artemis there that a lot of it will have to do with what updates they kind of championed and what communities liked those updates and whether or not that's kind of our listener base.
CSM Rep is also going to be a very interesting one with the lack of summits. The amount of content coming from the CSM itself and how much insight we have into their activity makes the voting a bit more interesting.
Yeah, I will have to say, I mean, I've also haven't really had the time to put into to track it. I've been trying to focus more on on real life stuff, but then also Noir and the network, managing and growing them. But I would have to say, like, I just am not. I would have a difficult time voting in this category. In other words, like, I don't know. It's just the way this worked out this year. I don't really feel like any particular CSM reps have stood out very strongly to me. I am going to do my research now that we have some nominees, and I'm going to make a call because I like to vote as well. But it's just been one of those years. I think the CSM's been in a lot of ways overshadowed by either game updates in general, some of which for strategic reasons CCP didn't involve them in, or just all the real life stuff that's been going on. There's been so much going on with real life politics, kind of hard to follow the space stuff.
I have something I want to say about that, but I know that it would tip the scales by saying it, so I'm going to hold it until the actual award is awarded.
Yes, very good. Definitely don't forget it, though. Write it down. Okay, well, like I said, please go in and vote. We would really appreciate all of your opinions. You can vote for all of the categories, some of the categories. You know, it's all kind of optional. So take a look. Send us your favorites. The winners will be getting our skins, so the new partner skins that have been handed out. Obviously, some of the people on this list will probably have their own, but that's fine. They can find a fun way to raffle them off. I just think it's a cool gift because we've never really been able to give anyone a tangible award necessarily, except for people in Noir. They'll get a medal, but you know, you can't give medals to people outside your corp, so I couldn't do that for everybody.
And when COVID
don't
is
have
gone,
email or don't have mailing addresses to give them anything physical. So, sorry, was that Artemis?
I was going to say, when COVID is gone, we should work on like a physical like challenge coin or something as an award. I think that'd be cool.
I think that would be pretty neat. I don't know if everyone would necessarily give us our addresses. I don't know. In a way, I haven't even really considered it. It's not a cost thing. Those coins are not terribly expensive, especially now that we have our Patreon going.
Can we just like a hidden Redbubble store and let the person order it from Redbubble so we don't have their address? We just like get it to them and then give them a discount code or something? I feel like there's a way to work around this.
I can't get discount codes for Redbubble. It's the one issue that I have with their site. I can understand why they do it, probably to make sure people don't send themselves tons of free merch, but I would love to be able to give people like Redbubble credits or something along those lines. I haven't really figured out a good way to do that yet.
Unlucky. We're working on it. We're working on it.
If anyone has an idea that we're not thinking of, you feel free to send it my way. All right, Andy. We've kind of buried the lead, I think. There is a earth-shattering event that happened in World War B. Everyone's talked it to death, so that's the reason why it didn't lead on this episode, but we would be doing everyone out there a disservice if we didn't talk about it. And of course, I'm referring to the massacre of M2-XFE. It was incredible. A battle over two timers with just staggering amounts of ISK destroyed. Staggering.
Yeah, I mean, so this was finally the big Titan fight that people have been waiting for since the start of the war. You know, from the very, very beginning when this started, what, almost a year ago now, the big thing was everyone was waiting for a big Titan fight to come, and they were like, this war isn't really serious until Titans come out. And then this is finally where it happened. So the first armor timer, or so like all structures, it was reinforced, and then the big fight came for the first armor timer. And during that fight, 23 trillion Ys was destroyed. So this set a new record for the number of Titans killed, with 127 dying from Imperium and 130 dying from Pappy. And kind of one of the other notable things there is that Imperium lost a Vanquisher, which is a faction Titan. So that happened kind of right in the middle of the fight. And I remember everyone, like every Discord I was on, kind of blowing up when they saw the Vanquisher kill hit Z-Kill. And so the first fight actually went surprisingly well, as far as both sides were very, very even. So even though it was a fight on a Keepstar that was belonging to Goons, Titan kills ended up fairly even on both sides. And also the server performed surprisingly well. So usually when there's these big fights, things break. But that didn't seem like the case, at least for the armor timer. Things went pretty smoothly. But one key thing that happened was this fight went until downtime. And so because it went until downtime, Titans get logged off in their positions and weren't able to extract. So a bunch of Titans are essentially stuck there, unable to extract until they can do a move op and form to get them out of there. Where things didn't go so well ended up being the second round during the structure timer. So here, unlike the first time, the servers actually performed kind of terribly, which is not uncommon in these big fights. But the way it failed really went in the favor of Goons. So not so much because they did anything right, but just the way the luck worked. Essentially what happened was Goons logged in much earlier in the day. They got a bunch of people preloaded into system, staged, that kind of thing. And so there was already 5,000 to 6,000 people in the system ready for the fight before it ever kicked off. Then Tess decided to bridge in their Titans to get the fight started. And as they started to bridge, the server just crashed. So Titans were loading on grid, but pilots would just be black screen, so they wouldn't actually be able to control their ships. They were loading slowly in like waves, so it wasn't that they, even though they had all jumped in together, some Titans were loading before others. And essentially what it turned into was the Imperium free firing on Tess Titans that were loaded or like half loaded on grid. From what I've heard, as far as reports go, it sounds like everyone had given the order to jump into system, but Tess were the first ones to do it. And then once the crash started happening, everyone else called it off before they had actually jumped in. So for this fight, it ended up being largely just Tess that lost Titans. The numbers are a little uncertain because there's some weird things that happened, like Titans that were in their original system that ended up generating kill mails, even though they hadn't actually jumped into M2 tag. And some other things like that.
To quote CCP's devlog on the matter, both during and after the fight, players experience things that don't happen under normal circumstances. Things like ships disappearing, ships reappearing, ships not appearing in the right systems, even after going through the jump tunnel, ghost kill mails, those being kill mails with no fittings, duplicate ships and mods, where a wreck with loot was in M2, but the fitted ship was in T5Z, that being the Pappy staging system, and bridging Titans getting moved to a system it was bridging people to, among other things. So, suffice it to say, server went poo-poo.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's an estimated 11.8 trillion Ys destroyed. I think most of that is Tess Titans, but the actual number of Titans and how much of that is truly died versus was like bugs or whatever, I think is unclear.
Yeah, and CCP's devlog does a good way of explaining why the server was so bad in this particular situation. And that was like 5,000 to 6,000 players, you're getting close to the previous record of most players in a single fight. Y'all probably remember the 6,500 players was the record in 9TAC 4. I think it was then broken by ULX. I don't remember exactly. But like, if you already have record numbers of players in a system and then are jumping in another 5,000 to 6,000 from T5Z, I think the dev blog said if everybody from T5Z had made it in to Desto system, had made it into M2 successfully, you would have had over 12,000 players in the same system, which is like almost double previous records. So then like, yeah.
Yeah. And they had pointed out that one of the key things was that people were jumping from a node with high server load to another node with high server load. And so a lot of times that isn't the case in these big fights. A lot of times in these big fights, your staging is okay, or wherever you're bridging from, more people are more distributed. And so it's really just the one node that you're going to. And so one of the things they mentioned was that part of why it maybe failed so spectacularly is because you were going from one spot that was at max load to another spot that's at max load. And so bugs are kind of happening on both ends of that.
So probably what we'll see in the future in these sort of heavy tie-dye fights is that if people can help it, they'll have their forces distributed among multiple systems to then jump into the single target system, if possible.
Right.
That's and like something that clearly had never happened before in the past, and so nobody could predict.
Yeah, the one thing I will say, though, that was kind of has happened in the past is once servers start to like get to max load, new things coming in tend to be the things that break, not the things that are already in system. So what we have seen in the past is where people have tried to bridge into a system with heavy load and things break. And so I think one of the takeaways from this is if you can get your forces into a contentious system before the other team can, you potentially have the upper hand due to server load and the likelihood that you'll load or your things will work properly when theirs won't.
Also, I think there might be something to be said for not necessarily bridging on grid with your target every single time.
Yeah, I mean, in the big fights with huge tie-dye and bubbles and that kind of thing, there's essentially no other option, I think. You essentially have to bridge your Titans into a range, otherwise they won't be able to hit anything and they'll get screened off. But in general, yeah, sometimes jumping straight onto grid is not the best. It's yeah, like this, if it fails pretty spectacularly.
There's a sort of an after action report posted up by ProGod saying they knew the value of getting their people in ahead of time, but sort of underestimated how long it would take them to get everything into position, so they wound up having to rush it. I'm a little concerned with his big takeaway is like, oh, they should have just called it off entirely. Like, well, that feels bad.
Yeah. I don't think
blocks are already pretty risk averse. It's just so unfortunate that, you know, it's so difficult to trust CCP servers to behave themselves. That said, the previous Titan fight in which more Titans died, but it was just on both sides, you know, that worked, according to all reports, relatively flawlessly. So it's not like a guaranteed thing.
Looking at ProGod's review and the discussion that everybody else has had and the rebuttals and whatnot, the slap fighting, so to speak, what it comes down to is there was no play to be made here. Pappy had a choice. You jump everybody in or you don't. They chose to jump everybody in. There isn't some sort of granularity or tweak to the way they did this to make it so that, like, they didn't result in just having to try and jump 5,000 to 6,000 people into a node under heavy tie-dye. There was no third option. It was either you'd make the jump or you don't make the jump, and they would have been screwed either way. So props to them for making the jump.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I mentioned, the only thing they really could have done differently is potentially staged earlier, but that doesn't really work so well for the attacking side because you can't just get on grid before and
with
just
a
sit
hostile
there.
Keep stuff. Yeah, exactly. You cannot just pre-stage on grid with a hostile keep
You can
star.
Get in system, but if you don't have a staging structure there or anything like that, yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, you can get people into system, gate camping, things like that. But yeah, you can't prevent other people from coming in. You can just get people into system so that you have more people in system than they do. You can get subcap superiority, not on grid, but in system. But how much that really helps you and what that stops, I'm not sure if that really helps you that much.
I don't think it helps you at all. with the Keepstar being what it is, gate camps are meaningless. The hostels just like literally bridge to their own Keepstar or jump into their own Keepstar whenever they want, as early as they want or as late as they want, tie-dye willing.
Right. The only thing it kind of does is
don't make this battle. Titans make this battle.
Yeah. The only thing it potentially does is gives them the same server issues jumping in Titans that you might, but that's questionable and totally dependent on the server itself. So well, I don't think that's a good strategy either.
The defenders can jump in their Titans piecemeal. They don't have to say, okay, my thousand Titans, not thousand, my hundreds of Titans jump in
someday,
all at once.
Someday.
That's what the attackers have to do here, because if they jump in piecemeal, they're going to get shredded. The defenders can jump in piecemeal, because as soon as they jump in, they dock.
Yeah, that's also a good point. Yep. I think I agree there. So yeah, there's not really a whole lot you can do from the attacking side then that would give you benefits. Being in system first doesn't really prevent them from doing anything.
So yeah, that was a fight. We broke some records. We broke some games.
And apparently there is some fallout on Reddit today. I don't know if it's 100% confirmed, but could have Suis's Black Omega security leaving test. Should be the first of what I assume will not be the last Corp / Alliance to leave the fight on the test side.
Yeah, so maybe that's a good lead into kind of the current state of where this big battle has kind of left us. Mm-hmm. So kind of where it leaves us is, like I said, during that first armor timer, all the Titans on the attacking side were essentially logged off at downtime and unable to extract. And since the Keepstar hasn't died, there's about 300 Titans, I think just over is what the estimates are, trapped in M2 TAC from the Pappy side. How accurate those numbers are, I'm not 100% sure, but that's the guesses at the numbers there. And then one of the interesting things is that the Imperium is trying to offer a golden ticket. So essentially split up Pappy by offering free passage out from whatever group is willing to leave the war. So they're essentially saying, if you leave the war, go back home, we'll let you log your Titans on and extract them with no ramifications.
Call it bullcrap on this Black Omega security leaving. Like, this post is literally just a screenshot of a Mumble server with 44 people in their Corp chat. A Corp meeting will have 44 people in it. Corp meetings happen, especially after big fights when a bunch of your dudes lose Titans and you need to sort out how to, like, replace them. And, like, the other comments and stuff, like the dude says, further proof is just a screenshot of some Titans and Supers sitting in fleets, no Corp tickers, on random Keepstar. Like, there is absolutely zero evidence for this. So, like, unless somebody has something else than what is here, this is a load of crap. It could be true, like, there could be a seedling of truth buried in this giant turd, but this is, let's face it, a giant turd.
Well, there's going to be a lot of pressure for folks to leave. And the trapped Titans are one thing, the golden ticket offer is one thing. There's also some strategic realities in that Imperium could not have asked for a greater morale boost after steadily being pushed back over the course of an entire year, holding fast, even as they're starting to lose their core systems in Delve. And now they have this amazing reinvigoration, and in fact have evened the odds quite a bit on the super capital front. They're starting to do some counteroffensive stuff. They're starting to go on the offense of some of the iHubs that they've lost, for instance.
Right, and so that kind of brings us to the last few days. So after the big fight in M2 TAC, they were able to take the iHub in that system with no pushback. So they're able to capture the M2 TAC iHub, which means that they recontrol the Cyanojammer. And then in UEXO TAC Z, they also captured the iHub. But notably, they failed to capture two iHubs in 1 TAC SMEB and M5 TAC, which I believe was just today, earlier today. So,
yeah, and that's... Sorry, continue. I thought you were done.
Yeah, so, I mean, just the point there is, even though the M2 TAC was definitely a morale blow, you can see that the fighting's not necessarily over, and it's not that they've kind of... They're pushing some, but they haven't just fully steamrolled Tappy and Pappy are still fighting back.
And that's, I'm not suggesting like the same that they're thing... steamrolling them. What I'm suggesting is, in a war of eve attrition, it's morale that make or breaks either side of a war. And after a year of steady losses, they've just been handed unquestionably the most definitive victory, regardless of how it happened, of any war in eve ever. They are riding high, and they're not going to be not riding high for a while. So any hopes that Pappy may have had about this war sort of being in its final days or weeks, that is gone.
I don't think
they
anybody
are in
was
for
under
a long haul.
I don't think anybody was under the impression it was in its final days or weeks anyway.
I mean, I think the one thing I would say is with the Keepstar not dying in M2 Tech, the question would kind of be, you have all these Delve Keepstars, how are you going to burn them down if they're contested?
They've done it before.
Well, they've done it before.
The thing is, goons can't, like, the Imperium cannot contest every Keepstar. They will not contest every Keepstar. We have seen Keepstars die uncontested. They contested this one for some strategic reason that we don't know. Probably they saw a mistake in the way the attackers were handling the thing, and so they committed to the armor timer. Maybe it was just they had the element of surprise, and so they took it. I think you cannot rely on them being able to put up the same defense for every single Keepstar. And you have to do the same thing with this fight as we did with UALX back in the day. Morale is important because morale has impact different than what ship losses have impact. Trapped Titans have an impact in that they can't provide like coverage. You no longer have a super umbrella, so to speak. Morale has impact because fleet numbers go down. Have we been seeing fleet numbers go down? Have we been seeing killboard activity go down? Have we been seeing this make an impact in terms of strategic objectives being won and lost in the region for six days until the 7th? So I guess that'd be 4 days. Math is hard. The Imperium was winning more timers than they were losing in Delve. Now, as of the 10th, the Imperium is back to losing more timers than they're winning in Delve. I'm talking Sov timers, so all those iHubs, all those TCUs, those are like, they're back to losing those again. What does that say about the impact of the morale and about the impact of the trapped super fleet, quote unquote? We forgot to mention, by the way, reports are going out 337 Titans are trapped in MTAC 2 or M2 TAC. No one, and I repeat, no one has any reason whatsoever to give you a realistic number on that. If you are believing the propaganda that says 337 Titans are trapped in M2 TAC, enjoy your fantasy. That is guaranteed to be the wrong number. It could be dramatically higher, dramatically lower, relatively close. There is absolutely zero reason to believe that number.
Oh, yeah. So we did mention the number, but I should point out that that number was the number that is reported by Imperium. So it's quite possible or quite likely that that's an overstatement.
Even if like it's 25% that here. Number, though, it has to be something significant because Imperium is committing a lot of resources to continue to camp it out.
Imperium's committing a lot of resources to keep the morale high. And saying that the hostiles have a bunch of Titans trapped and thus motivating your members to hell camp the system is exactly what you need to do to keep the morale high. Like, but if Pappy came out and said to show that you've got a bunch of Titans there, because if somebody hears, oh, there's 300 and something Titans still trapped in this system, they're going to stay logged in there in the hopes that one of them is going to try and escape and you get the shiny kill mail.
Right, but that's a waste if you could use those pilots somewhere else. So whatever
it's
is
not
trapped,
a waste
they have
if,
to think it's worth it.
It's not a waste if those pilots sitting in that system is a morale boost to your entire coalition who's out fighting the war elsewhere. Like, it's not like the Imperium can only hellcamp this system. They can still fight elsewhere. They still have all the wars in Reddit and all the wars on the media and all of the dealings they have to do to keep their people from not logging in anymore. The morale value, the hearts and minds are won by continuing to hellcamp this system and by saying that everybody's trapped in there. Pappy could come out tomorrow and say that, no, guys, we actually got everybody out of there already, and it wouldn't matter. It's just like, what was that system where some back in the old Sov when you had freaking stations that flipped and then all your assets were stuck and everybody was like, oh, this alliance's entire assets are stuck in this station. And it turned out to be not true after a while, but everybody believed it. And so guess who got the benefit of all that morale? There could be 337 Titans stuck in M2. There could be zero. We don't know. That's my point.
Well, if it's 20% of the claimed number, that's still a huge amount. That is a lot.
But what impact does that have? Strategically, what impact does that have?
I think it puts kind of a chilling effect on Pappy's willingness to use supers and other engagements. Which, they still have the... Yeah, I think it does, because that's a not insignificant amount of their numbers tied up. Keep in mind, Imperium has a massive super fleet of its own. Admittedly, Pappy has the edge there, but they have lost a lot of that edge. It's no longer, at least to my knowledge, it's no longer an unquestioned case that they have the advantage. It's much more of a toss-up. So if even a little bit of their fighting force is tied down, their math is going to be to wait to try to get those Titans extracted before they even think about doing another brawl like this again, if they're willing to do it at all. I would imagine it's extremely reasonable for them to be a little more reluctant to deploy it, given what happened to the last time. And that reluctance is a godsend to Imperium, who now has a freer hand to act.
I would wholeheartedly disagree with that assessment.
Really? If you know that your opponent is not going to be deploying supercaps, or that if they do, you will have the advantage or at least an even fight if you bring yours, that gives you a lot of strategic confidence. You can make decisions based on that information and be bolder than you normally would be.
Let me tell you why, Alec. 122 Titans died in the first round of M2 on the side of Pappy, and they still took the fight for the structure timer. With more Titans, right? You got to remember, there were a crap ton of Titans that just weren't around for the armor timer on M2. I think that's a big part of why it happened, is because with the other Titans not there at that moment, it was much more even for the Imperium side. And so, like, that's why there were 6,000 people pre-staged for goons, and then 6,000 people over in T5Z trying to get over. Like, plus all the Titans and Supers who were logged off from the armor timer. I think if you look at the numbers, the Imperium is dramatically lower in terms of numbers of Titans and Supers. The barrier is logistically getting all of the Pappy forces in one place for the timer on time. Like, 122 Titans died in the armor timer of M2. There were who knows how many that were still sitting there after downtime, logged off. And Pappy made the choice to continue the fight. I think the only thing that's going to stop them is not going to be... The thing that puts a chilling effect on Pappy right now is not however many number of Titans are still stuck in M2. That is inconsequential. What's going to stop them is how bummed out their dudes are that they lost this. It's how poorly they handled, like, the putting out the fires. I think, forget the term for managing when you're looking bad in the public's eyes. PR, for managing your PR. Like, putting Vili and Progod onto news shows so they can get blasted by goons is not a good plan. I think that is what's going to have a chilling effect. The morale of their people is what's going to have a chilling effect. However many Titans may or may not be stuck in M2 doesn't matter at all. And Imperium knows this, which is why they are insisting that a crap ton of Titans are stuck in M2 so they can continue to, like, wave it in Pappy's noses and try to reduce the morale even more while keeping their own members up. Like, the actual number of Titans that are stuck there, it could be 337. That's still, like, a quarter, maybe, of what Pappy had. They start their Titan fights with much less than that, with, like, 300 to 400.
I
am not concerned
saying.
At all, even if the full Imperium number that they're guesstimating is stuck in there.
I see what you're saying, but I think the reason they would take that second fight isn't because they lost 100 Titans and it didn't matter to them. It's because the Imperium lost a similar amount of Titans. The math didn't really change. With M2, all the losses were on one side. Math did change, at least a little bit. And if they're able to kill, even more Titans off the back of it. That's further morale wins for them and further narrowing down that possibility. How many Titan pilots aren't going to show up for the next testing?
Which just goes to my point.
They don't know if they're going to survive it. You know.
But Alec, you've just made my point for me. You've just said that the important thing isn't how many Titans are stuck there. It's the Titans that were lost on Pappy's side already that weren't lost on the Imperium side, right? The number of Titans that are stuck literally is meaningless. It is purely a point for PR and morale.
I wouldn't say literally. I mean, you can, in the short term, it's additive to the Titans that are dead because Test can't use them for anything.
Right. They essentially
and many of them
used.
May still die.
If
yeah,
there are any still
trapped. Used until, well, yeah. So if there are any still strapped, whatever those are, they're temporarily unavailable, which is essentially the same as them being dead in the short term, at least. Like, if there's another Keepstar fight, and that fight is not in M2 tech, they cannot use those Titans if they're camped to bolster their side. So if those numbers are needed, which I guess is the question, I don't know if they would necessarily would be needed. And again, we don't know how accurate that estimate is. But if it were to come to the point where those were needed, they would essentially be unavailable.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here like this is a big L for Pappy. Pappy is going to have a hard road ahead of them getting the momentum back in their favor. They're starting to see some small strategic wins in terms of turning the solve back in their favor. They're making more wins than they are losses. They're going to have to regroup in their home field because initiative is tearing up catch. Like, this is definitely a big L for them. Their morale is not in the places it should be, and their appendance is higher than it should be. But the freaking 337 Titan, like, the war is won because we have 337 Titans trapped in M2, is absurd. That number should not be believed, and its impact is completely nebulous. Not even nebulous, it's like illegitimate. It has zero impact on the long-term success of this war. 337 Titans, number one, that number is wrong. I can guarantee it. And two, it's not going to impact things.
I would say it's overstated. I wouldn't say it's not going to impact things at all. I would say it puts like a, again, like, I would assume that at some point they're going to get all of them out of there, minus a few that get caught for whatever reason, DCs, that kind of thing. But
what was the system back in World War B1, where they're like, all of the Imperium supers are logged off in a pause on this moon, and then turned out none of the Imperium supers were logged off on a pause in that moon. And like everyone's like, this is going to be the end of the war. Imperium can never recover.
The one thing
like,
I'll
history
say...
history tells us this is pro crap.
Yeah, the one thing I will say, though, is because everyone made it to downtime together, they know for a fact that they're logged off there, or some are logged off.
No, they
off
don't,
there, right?
Because of how crappy the server was. You have no idea if they're actually in that system, or if they're back over in T5Z.
Okay, so, well, this is from the first armor timer, though, that are still logged off, not from servers that shitting themselves. So again, numbers could be inaccurate. I don't know how they're getting their 337, but I guarantee you that there are some that are stuck there from the first armor timer that essentially stayed logged off the entire time, even through the structure timer, never logged on, and are still stuck there.
Supers have gotten out. Like, Titans have escaped. This hell camp is not 100% like...
Right,
supers
yeah,
Supers have
yeah, yeah.
escaped. So... It's crap. Like I don't know
yeah,
how to state
I mean,
my point anymore. Like,
no, I
feel like
I
I'm just giving
saying.
More airtime to this bullcrap propaganda that yeah. Titans are trapped and the war is won.
Oh, I think it's overstated the impact it has. I think that things, like, I would argue that things are at least temporarily, like, big fights on Keepstars where you might need those numbers, where you expect it to be contested. I expect those to be temporarily paused until they need it. I think if Keepstar isn't contested, those numbers don't matter. For all the IHAB stuff, those numbers don't matter. So I think the impact is definitely overstated 100%, but I wouldn't say it's inconsequential entirely. Like, I think there's still some strategic aspect to those Titans being stuck there, but I think it's much less than what people are arguing, or at least what the propaganda suggests.
All right. Well, it's certainly something we're going to be keeping an eye on, and we'll give the audience continued updates on the biggest and coolest conflict in Eve's modern memory as things progress. Host highlights. Just wanted to share a little bit from my holiday vacation. I spent most of it house hunting, trying to move in with the fiancé. And it was quite the adventure. I think we saw like over 20-something apartments and condominiums and houses. Finally did settle on a place, but man, it was a whirlwind. Some days we were doing 4 or 5 showings at a time, just walking around. And the entire time I had like this huge cut on my big toe. So I was like literally limping because anytime I would walk, like the crank of my shoe would just touch it. So it was like being like having a raw new
highlight
over and over. This is a highlight. Yeah, yeah. It was honestly, it was cool. I'm like a low-key architecture fan. So it was really neat to see all the different buildings and all the different room layouts and how they're all arranged and designed, decorated and stuff in some cases. So it was pretty neat. There was one in particular that was awesome. Remarkably low price. Of course, we found out why after we got there. But we turn up and the apartment complex is literally on a cliff face overlooking the ocean. I'm like, holy shit. This view is amazing. And we go look at the actual units that they had available for rent. They're on the exact opposite side of the building facing a highway. God damn it. It was a nice apartment, but I couldn't live there knowing that people paying nearly the same price a couple blocks away have like this awesome vista and I have fumes and like car noises. Fuck that. So we did eventually wind up finding a place, which is cool. I'm not going to give out too much detail about it, but we settled on something that kind of worked. Had to make a few compromises here and there, but you know, that's just the way of it. We saw like 25, 30 different apartments. None of them were 100% perfect. Every single one had something wrong with it. Even the one that was like the best was pretty much outside our price range by $100 or $200 a month. And also had like really spotty maintenance issues with their garage and other things. So it's like, okay, nothing is perfect. What are we willing to live with? We finally figured it out and got everything settled. And it's just a huge load off my mind. So that's why it's the highlight. Armas?
My highlight is a 300 mil ESS hull in T1 Cruisers. Not all at once. I got it from multiple systems just yeeting around. I know I think it was the last show we talked about the fleet that I did with like the battle cruisers and the force recons. And we're like, well, you know, maybe this yeeting thing isn't the best goal. If you have a fleet, you should just head for the big scores. And I sort of had that in mind when I decided, well, okay, what if I'm just like one T1 cruiser per system? And then I can get a crap ton of these lower hulls simultaneously and yeet around all I want. And what do you know? It works really well. So I had 4 stabbers just going around. If a defense fleet showed up, I'd try and shake them. And if I couldn't, then I would yeet to a new location. And over the course of 1.5 to 2 hours, I got 300 mil. Which, if you're considering like multi-boxing 4 characters, yes, I'd make more in the Abyss. If you're considering the fact that I'm literally using 20 mil ISK T1 cruisers, it's pretty freaking fantastic. And of course, had I decided that I wanted to take fights with anybody, then I could have taken fights with people. I think that this ESS thing is phenomenal. I would say if you are an alpha pilot who's looking for some PvP and being like, all this solo small gang stuff requires snakes and high skill points and whatever, grab yourself a T1 cruiser, go ESS running. If you get a fight, then you've had success. If you don't get a fight, then you have ISK. Congratulations.
And you can also, so you can do the cargo deposit. So if you loot a couple ESSs and you're not sure you can get it home, you can just cargo deposit into an enemy structure, asset safety it out, and then you can take whatever the next fight is. Because I know a lot of times when you do kind of solo roams and that kind of thing, you might pick up something that's semi-valuable, whether it's like a mod off someone you killed or like this, the ESS certificates. And then you kind of get in the state where you're like, oh, I don't want to take fights now because I have all this ISK. I want to get back to high sec or whatever. Well, you can just deposit it. And then once you know you've gone ISK positive, essentially, you can take whatever fight you want.
Yeah, I'm super happy with it.
Andy, what's your highlight?
Yeah, so my highlight is some nano roams that we did actually last week, I think. So real life has been busy, but I finally kind of got a break right after the holidays. And so we were off deployment. It was after we had finished up the structure contracts that Artemis kind of covered. And so we just roamed around and I had an absolute blast. I think every single roam we did, we came out is neutral or is positive. And one of them, we even came out perfect. We had no losses and we killed like at least 600 mil. So we had a couple of good fights on gates, caught a couple things. We had some really good communication and trade-offs with tackle. It was just like a blast. It was kind of one of those things where the roam just kind of clicked, like everyone did well together. We had a recruit with us. And so it was just a really good experience and really fun. And so that's kind of the first time I've gotten to just roam around in Nano for a while. And I loved it. So it was good to like feel like I'm back in the game.
Freeing, right? Nanoing around.
Yeah.
That's cool. I want to give a shout out to our Golden Elite subscribers on Patreon, Mark Havoc, Kestrel Swainson. Also want to give a shout out to the Paragon Elite Corporation that are trying out for our alliance. We're currently on deployment with them in Immensi, and we're just kind of feeling each other out, seeing if it might be a good long-term fit. They're kind of a smallish PvP corp, a little bit smaller than Noir, but seem like really good guys so far. We're having fun, and you know, we'll see how things go. But I just wanted to give them a little bit of love for reaching out to us and, you know, providing some really great content.
My shout out goes to Toilet Paper Dot, the people who are living currently in Tribute, like where CO2 used to live, and I guess Tess lived there, and then some other random people, but they're there now. And I stole a bunch of money from their ESSs, yeeted around. And coming to the end, this was not the Stabber fleet. This was, I was inspired by our EUTZ. I think it was either Tommy or maybe it was Robert. I want to say it was Robert had a cheap fleet, a bunch of T1 cruisers. They went out and did some ESS stuff. And I'm like, well, that looks like a good idea. I'll do it myself, all by myself. And so I had a thorax and two size. There was a shield thorax. Did surprisingly high damage, including the 155 DPS from each scythe, because medium drones, wow. I was pushing an 1100 DPS with drones plus my thorax, which nobody expects when you see a thorax and two size sitting in an ESS on your D-scan. So I was able to get a good number of kills from that fleet. And then the final fight I had, I was wrapping up. TP was there. I had a scepter with all my loot in it. I wasn't doing the 15% tax on that asset safety nonsense. I didn't think I could quad box effectively. So I was just triple boxing. And they came in, they had forced me out of their pocket earlier with their defense fleet. And so they sort of knew what was up. And I knew if I sat here in WH TAC with my fleet, I would get a fight. And so I figured this would be the end of my roam. So they come in and local spikes by good and half dozen. I uploaded footage of this, by the way, from when the fight started. And they came in with a Vexer and a Scythe fleet issue against my two scythes and my stabber. Not my stabber, my thorax. They knew that they would. This is starting to sound like a highlight. You can watch the video. Shout out to them, TLDR. They had a big old blob sitting outside the ESS, but this stabber fleet issue and, or scythe fleet issue, pardon me, and Vexa were like, nah, fam, we got this scythe tackled. We can win. So hold your folks back and let us have a good fight. They were wrong. I won. I got the kills and I escaped with my life, but shout out to those guys for holding back the blob for the good fight.
That's awesome. Gotta check your video out, and I'll put it in the show notes so everyone else can check it out too.
Yeah, I'll have to watch it too after we're done.
I'm told it's not impressive piloting. It was just 100% my adrenaline at the time was like, this is amazing! It's like, it's boring, but I am proud of it, okay?
Whatever gets you there. Whatever gets you there.
You got the W, so yeah. That matters. Yeah, and then my highlight is, my shout out is for Vice, who has been SCing some of our fleets out in Immensia. Like Alex said, we've been deployed with the elite guys, and so normally kind of our USTZ is either kind of quiet or I kind of step up and FC stuff, but Vice has been FCing a ton, and it's taken pressure off me. I can just kind of show up for fleets, and it makes it super nice, and we've been catching some cool stuff, so shout out to him.
Yeah, it was great to see him stepping up and taking the reins a little bit. I'm going to try to be FCing a little bit more now that I'm back too. Well, that's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll and vote in the Black Mark Awards. Nara is recruiting, and we can use a few of our good mercs. Join CafeNara.in-game for more info. And wherever you are, whoever you're flying with, whether you may or may not be trapped in M2. Good hunting, listeners.